My name is Sarah Kiefer. Today is March 3rd, 2017, and I'm speaking with Gail Tamirian Mendeli, who is the Executive Director of Life Opportunities in Ridgewood, New Jersey. We're recording this interview in the Bolger Heritage Center of the Ridgewood Public Library. Oh, thank you, Gail, so much for coming today. Appreciate you agreeing to have your story recorded, or actually Life Opportunities stories recorded. So I guess to get started, could you explain a little bit about what Life Opportunities, what type of services it provides to the community?
Yes, Life Opportunities Unlimited is a human service agency for folks with developmental disabilities. So we provide residential services and day program services to individuals who in the past you would have noted that they were mentally retarded or had another disability. Actually, the definition of a developmental disability is that it is an early onset prior to the age of 21. So the folks we serve have been disabled all of their lives for the most part.
Okay. And how did this nonprofit start in Ridgewood and when?
It started, we became operational in that we rented office space in 1997 at 61 North Maple, actually, if you like to know. We were responding to a need that the county and the state had identified. The developmental center in Princeton, the North Princeton Developmental Center, had been scheduled to close, and they were in desperate need for group homes for the individuals who were living in that developmental center. So we began by opening our Glen Rock group home in response to that need, which is a total care facility. So we brought five folks from the developmental center out, all senior citizens, all medically involved, as well as having their developmental disability, and all individuals who had lived more than 20 years in the institution. We actually had one woman who came to us after having lived in this institution for 64 years. So some of what we did in that house was just get people used to being in a community again.
And along those lines, can you describe those programs that you provide so that they are getting more involved in the community?
Okay. What we try to do, and in Glen Rock specifically, that's a total care facility. So in that home, everyone who's there is literally taken care of, and that would mean they're helped to dress, their food is prepared for them, all of their needs are being met. In the other group homes, it is less so. The other folks are more ambulatory and able, and those folks maybe also are functioning on a higher level. So they are out in the community and in the group home helping to do things that need to be done. So they make their beds, and they may help in preparing their meals and helping with their laundry and shopping and things like that. So other than the Glen Rock group home, all of the folks in our Midland Park group home, Washington Township group home, and Fairlawn group homes are out and about in the community living like you and I live. So you'll see them in the supermarket. You'll see one of our fellows actually worked in Stop and Shop and retired from there a few years ago. So they are out doing what everybody else does. They're visiting museums. They're going to concerts. They're here in town. They participate in all of the activities we have to offer. And Ridgewood has a lot of things to offer. So you'll see them going to the art in the park in the summers and watching the film, the movie night, and going to Kesher for the concerts. So they're around. They use the libraries. They use the libraries in their own towns, though.
And I had read an article that you had hosted a dance. Can you talk a little bit about that event and what it meant to the company?
the dance was an interesting concept. The whole story of Life Opportunities is kind of an interesting concept. I had worked for another agency for 10 years and left that agency to open this one. So while I'm the executive director here, I'm also the founder. At the time that I decided I would be opening this agency, I realized or found out that I was expecting. So my husband had said to me, oh, tell them you're not going to do it, you're not going to do it. And I said, no, both things are a blessing. We live in Ridgewood and have been living in Ridgewood now for 25 years. I said, well, this baby will come to work with me. Which, if someone told me this, I'd say this woman is out of her mind, because you're going to open up a business, you're going to take your infant to work with you, and you're going to be dealing, that business is dealing with the needs of people who are very needy. But nonetheless, I am a firm believer that God puts you where you're supposed to be, and you do what you're supposed to be doing, and it worked out. So with Matthew in tow, we went to work every day to the office at 61 North Maple, which then became sort of an annex to our home. And he had a very interesting upbringing. He had exposure to people that most people don't have exposure to. So he got to know our clients and love our clients. They're like uncles and aunts to him. So he was 15 years old and came home one day after walking around town with his friends and said, you know that club Blend? And I said, yes, it's closed, isn't it? He said, yeah, it is closed. I think we should have a nightclub experience for the clients. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, I think they should have a real club experience. And I said, Matthew, first of all, what do you know about a club experience? But they go to dances every week, and that was just his point. They do go every week. They go to churches, they go to schools, and these things go on. But they're like a school dance in a gymnasium. He wanted to step it up. And God bless him, he did. He kept hounding me to find out who owned Blend, which was now closed. And we called Joan Groom at the chamber, and she said, well, it's Ed Sullivan. And I mean, can you have a better name than that? So we were saying, okay, do you think he'd give us Blend? He said, absolutely. You can have it for the night. It'll be its last hurrah. It's going to be a steakhouse soon. And sure enough, it was its last hurrah. We went in there. We organized. We cleaned. We got it going. One of the fellows that works with us at Life Opportunities in the day program, he's a DJ. He donated his music and his time. Other people, Matthew then went with Ed, knocking on people's doors and introducing himself, telling them what they wanted to do. And the first people who supported us was Paul Vaggiano, said, it's Greek to me. And the man, Huey Cohen from the office. They catered the entire event. So it was an incredible night. Tim Hillman, who's a videographer in town, he did a video of it. There's a whole film of it. Clients came from various agencies. It was the night after Valentine's Day. There was a red carpet. Matthew had not only done this part, but he gave it a logo. It's called Club Lou Tonight. There were T-shirts made. There were black T-shirts for security guards. The staff came and acted in that capacity, as well as other, you know, in other roles that you would have in a club. And it was an incredible night. And to his credit, he said, well, we have to do it again. So the following year, he's saying, well, where can we do it? Where can we do it? Well, the old Bank of America building was empty on East Ridgewood Avenue. Again, he calls his now best friend, Ed Sullivan, and said, Ed, who owns the building? Ed introduced him to the owner of the building, and the man said, go ahead, take it. Again, we did the whole shebang. And found out, this was, you know, sometimes things are really meant to be. And this one afternoon, we had to go to rent the tables. And it was different. There were no tables. There were no chairs. There were no tablecloths. So we went to rent all this equipment. And we thought, well, you know, this is a bank. It probably needs lighting, too. So they said, okay, they'd get back to us with the cost of the lighting. Well, the cost of the lighting was just so out of sight. I was picking him up from school, and I had just gotten the email telling me what it would cost, and I said to him, Matthew, we can't swing this. All of a sudden, he said, I forgot my computer. Can we go home? And that's always an advantage to have your office and your home in the same town. I have the world's best commute, 4 minutes with lights. So he goes in the house to get the computer. As he closes the car door, the cell phone rings. It's the secretary in the office saying, some man saw the article in the Bergen Record, and he's a lighting designer. He wants to design the lighting. We were so taken back. Of course, we welcomed him. He stuck with us because now the Club Lou has not just been that those 2 years. It's gone on 2 years at Park West Loft because we've run out of empty buildings in Ridgewood that could handle this. And it's gone from the clients who came from the various group homes in the county to people all over the county who know about it, wait for it, can't wait for the event. And, you know, you don't think that one night a year could be so meaningful, but it's a classy night. I mean, last year the Project Interact kids come and dance, and they've got their colored T-shirts on that say Club Lou. But last year we even had sunglasses that had the Club Lou insignia on the sides, and they really are so taken with this because it's something that's real and it's grown up and it's clearly for adults. It's clearly what adults do because, you know, you walk that red carpet. Everybody knows that red carpet, no matter what level of functioning you're on. And all I have to tell you is to watch those videos and see the expressions on their faces when they see that red carpet. They know this is unlike anything else they've ever done. And it always is. So, yeah. So now this year, he's probably going to do the loft again because we still don't have a big space in town, which is a good thing.
Yeah. But how many people would you say attended then?
Oh, it's usually over 100. Oh, wow. It's usually like 100, 125. Last year, actually, believe it or not, People Magazine saw the article in the Record and had a reporter call and do an interview. So it was on people. It was in people.com. So it's really made it. It's gotten to be quite an event. So Matthew claims, and I tend to believe him, that he's going to keep this going, you know, forever.
Forever's a long time, but you right. know, keeping it going is good. How could you describe how your business has then, or the agency has changed over the last 5, 10, 20 years, I guess?
Well, the major changes that are happening right now is that we contract with the state of New Jersey in order to provide the services that we provide. And at this point, we are on the threshold of becoming a fee-for-service agency, which means we will now be charging Medicaid. So it'll be functioning administratively, at least, in the same way that a nursing home does. It won't be a contract any longer. It'll be, pardon me, you'll get paid for the services that you're providing. So there's a whole billing component, which is kind of unfair and disheartening because it takes you away from the other parts of what you do. But I think in the end it'll all work out, as long as the clients are happy and able to do the things that they enjoy doing.
And what inspired you to get involved in the public service like this?
I have an undergraduate degree in speech pathology. And after many, 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 many years of doing practicums in speech and whatnot, as I was studying, many hours, not years, I should say, I realized when I was young, I wanted to touch more people faster. That was what was important to me. So I was very fortunate in that I had a job as a speech therapist for a while, and from there I went to Bergen Community College and became their director of programs for the disabled. Now we're going back a long time. We're going back to the 70s when the disabled movement was just getting started. So at that point, I left after 4.5 years, and I had instituted programs there for people with disabilities. And then I went on to do a master's degree in the UK on a fellowship, which was lovely, and came back and said, you know what, I really want to open up an agency. I want to work for a not-for-profit that is providing services to the disabled. And that's what ultimately I did. I worked for another agency, left there to come and open this one. And it's been very exciting, and it's been a blessing to know that you are where you're supposed to be and that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. And our clients' lives are so rich because of what we do. I mean, they're doing things that you can only hope members of the general population take advantage of. For example, there's an art show that the county sponsors every fall, Advance on Park. And my guys take photography classes through the day program. So we've asked if we could participate, and the county is only too happy and only too welcoming to have us there. We have them have an exhibit every year. They put their work on exhibit as well. It's a validation of who they are and what they can do, rather than focusing on what they can't do. And that, you know, sometimes people say to me, what do you think the magic is of this agency or the way your programs operate? Because we've had folks that have had real behavior issues that don't anymore. And the answer is, when you treat a person respectfully and you understand what their needs are, and they understand what your expectations are, and they trust you and you trust them, they rise to the occasion. And we've seen that time and time again. I mean, we've had people who had terrible behaviors who don't anymore, and it's because they're treated like adults, number one. And number two, we don't focus on what they can't do. We focus on what they can do. And we build on that.
Well, it makes sense. And along those lines, like what you can and can't do, is there a particular client that maybe influenced how you thought about running the agency, or just maybe even a story of a client that impacted your life?
Well, I think if I were to say to you, there's no one client that I can point to. But what I can tell you is a story that someone shared with me about a client that he's passed away since. He used to live in our Midland Park group home, and he was very low functioning. I remember when he came, he was again from the North Princeton Developmental Center closing, and he really was very low functioning. They said he's functioning like a 2-year-old. And I remember when I met him saying, oh no, Matthew's 2 years old. He's functioning like he's 16 months. He came anyway, and we gave him, I think, a very special life. He started calling the group home manager Mama. He never had words. He didn't speak before this. He was in his 50s. The other clients looked at him as though he were a younger sibling, and they would make sure that in the mornings when they left for the day program, one of them would make sure that Larry had his lunchbox, and somebody else would say, Larry, come here, let me zip your coat, if the staff hadn't zipped it for him. And then they would make sure he got on the van and he was seated and strapped in. They saw a need to take care of him and protect him. And he had, sadly, he had aspiration pneumonia more than once. And we were in the hospital, and the guardian, who was his cousin, who, God bless her, she came down from Vermont, said, they're telling me he needs a tracheotomy. Now, we're not a medical facility. We're based on a social systems approach. So we don't have nurses. We don't have doctors. We use the nurses and doctors in the community, just like you would. And they wanted to do the trach. And there's always a danger with a tracheotomy that it can't be reversed. But he was going to die if they didn't do it. So she looked at me and I said, "What do you have no choice, so do it." So they did the trach, and of course it couldn't be reversed. And by not being reversed, we could bring him back to the group home. Mm-hmm. However, we stayed faithful to him. And this to me was so significant because the clients in the Midland Park group home, that's where he lived, would go every week or two to the hospital to see him. And one week, one of the clients came back and said to the manager, "We can bring him home, Maureen. We can bring him home. Larry can come home. You and I, we can take care of him." A few weeks went by. They went back to visit him. And they realized, he came, when they left, he said to her, "I think he could go live in Glen Rock," because remember, Glen Rock's total care. "I think he could go live in Glen Rock." And when this story came back to me, I was really touched because they still cared for him. And they saw... Sorry. That this was one family. And as long as he was with us, he was still okay. Didn't matter which group home. It just mattered he was with us. Sadly, it didn't work out. We still advocated for him. I did, and all of the rest. But as luck would have it, he passed away, and he, you know. But he's finally at peace. But they cared about him. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Very nice story. So, it's things like that that you know. It looks like it's such a great accomplishment in your work and volunteer career with Life Opportunities.
Well, I'm not a volunteer. Mm-hmm. I'm their executive director, and I am paid. So that you know, that should be you know.
But still, I mean the accomplishments that the agency has made an impact on Ridgewood and Glen Rock, the surrounding communities
Well.
And looking ahead, do you have any other goals that you're working towards with the agency?
Yeah, we would like very much to start. We have a couple of ideas for day programs, and they would be very exciting. The program we have right now is one that was originally established for the needs of a very needy population, which were the folks we had brought out of the institution. While we still have that contingent to serve, we also realize that we'd like to do some other kinds of things as well. And we have right now on the flame boiling a pot so that we can start possibly another new program. And it's an exciting time because it would be for more able people, so it would be more purposeful and not, you know, what our guys do in their day program now is recreational. There's a horticultural therapist who comes in. There's a music therapist. The women have what we call women's club, and it's a social worker who comes in and does a group session with them on women's issues that pertain to them. And they have their issues, you know, they really do have their issues. So, you know, that's what we're doing now. But this other program would be more work-based. So as soon as we hear about it, I'll come back and tell you.
Okay. Yes, we'll do a part two.
We'll do a part two, exactly.
And is there anything else you want to share about your stories with Life Opportunities?
I think the most important thing about Life Opportunities Unlimited is that it is providing a service. It is providing a life for folks who otherwise might not have a life. I mean, their families are long gone for the most part. They may have siblings, but the siblings are not able or equipped to support them on a daily basis. You know, I always say to people, we contract with the state to provide residences, but we don't give residences. We give lives, because our guys have full lives and they're a part of the community. They are as much a part of the community as you or I. And I guess that's pretty much what it's all about. Everybody having an opportunity to make their, to leave their mark. And our guys do.
That's really great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come over here and talk. And I hope we do get a part two when the new program gets started. And yeah, that's it. Thank you so much, Gail. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Sarah.